The Book Nook on WYSO is made possible by five local library systems in Southwest Ohio: the Greene County Public Library, Washington Centerville Public Library, Clark County Public Library, the Dayton Metro Library, and the Wright Memorial Public Library.
Hello, welcome to the Book Nook on WYSO. I'm Vic McCunis, and this morning I'd like to welcome back to the program Renee Denfeld. She joins us by telephone from Powell's Books in Portland, Oregon. Hello, Renee.
Hello, Vic. It's so nice to talk to you again.
Well, it's so nice to talk to you at a bookstore. That seems even more appropriate because you have a new book.
I know. I do. I have a new book out called The Child Finder, and I am delighted I get to make this phone call, actually, in the famous Powell's Books, their warehouse, actually. So it seems very fitting.
Well, we had you on the show for your first novel, which I absolutely loved.
My debut novel called The Enchanted.
Uh-huh.
And was just felt very lucky. It did quite well and got a lot of critical acclaim. It took me a little time to have another voice kind of come call, which is how my novels are kind of generated when I hear a voice, which doesn't sound probably, it doesn't feel as crazy as it sounds. But it happened again. And so now I have my second novel, The Child Finder, is out.
These voices that you hear, they're very much connected to who you are, aren't they?
Yeah, you know, I have a history in writing nonfiction. When I started writing novels, though, I felt like this is really what I was meant to do. And I think a part of the reason is because I'm a lyrical writer. My work can be very poetic. But another kind of deeper reason is my fiction is actually far more personal. It's very much inspired by my life history, my work, things that I've experienced, things I've witnessed. So it kind of comes from this deeply personal, authentic feeling place inside myself.
Our listeners are probably wondering, well, what is it that you do? What's your occupation?
I think you probably know, most writers in the United States, at least, we have day jobs. It's pretty rare to support yourself as a writer. So I have a day job, only mine is, it's interesting, it's different. I think a lot of writers, for instance, are teachers. But what I decided to do is, over 10 years ago, I went out and I actually got licensed as an investigator. And I have worked to date hundreds of cases. I've worked with sex trafficking victims. I've worked. I've exonerated innocent people out of prison. Worked death penalty cases. And it's just been this. I wanted to do it in part because I really want to do things. I'm very devoted to helping others. But it's been just profoundly inspiring as a writer. I feel like I've, both of my novels actually have been inspired by my day job as well as other things. And it's just been, transformative to me as a person and transformative, I think, for my career as well, for my inspiration for the stories that I hear.
The voice that you heard for The Child Finder, was it the voice of Naomi? Was it the voice of Madison? Whose voice was it?
It was the voice of a little girl. I can tell you the story real quick of when I heard it, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Portland, here in Portland, we usually don't have very cold winters, though that's changed lately. And several years ago, we've had this just epic snowstorm. And pretty much, when there's a single snowflake falls from the sky here, the whole city shuts down. And it snowed for days, and, our buses can't run, everything shuts down. And so it was just this incredible, beautiful, snowy landscape outside. And I took my dog out late one night for a walk, and, it was just completely silent and ghostly and bright and beautiful out. And I hiked down to a river overlooking our forest here, and I heard the voice, a very distinctive voice of a little girl, and she said, "I'm the snow girl."
Mm.
And so it was the voice of the child character, Madison, in the novel, who is a little girl who went missing in the woods 3 years before, and everybody's presumed that she's dead, only she's not. And that was the impetus for the book. And I was so overjoyed to hear this voice come back and to know that I was going to start writing again. I just remember I ran home yelling. This was like whooping with joy. And it just poured out from there.
I remember when I interviewed you for The Enchanted, and you talked about how that voice came to you as well.
My first novel, The Enchanted, the voice was, I was leaving a death row prison one day, and it was a voice that came to me of an inmate I hadn't met, and he said, "This is an enchanted place."
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it turned out to be the first novel of that, the first line of that novel.
Mm-hmm. Renee Denfeld joins us. Her new novel is The Child Finder, and the child finder of your title is a woman named Naomi, and I challenge anybody to read this book and resist falling in love with this character.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. I agree. I'm kind of a little in love with Naomi myself. I think she's just an incredibly compassionate kind of character. She's a young woman. She is an investigator like myself, though she's not me at all. But she's a young woman who, as an investigator, specializes in finding missing children. So she was asked by Madison's parents. 3 years have passed, and everybody else has kind of moved on and presumed Madison died in the woods. But her parents have not moved on, and they've asked Naomi, the child finder, as people call her, to see if she can find Madison. You know, what I found just really compelling about the character is, you know, Naomi has a very difficult, traumatic past of her own that drives her work. And as she's trying to find Madison, she's really wrestling with her own history. And I found that just really compelling. And she's such a wonderfully complex, vulnerable person at heart.
And she is someone who doesn't really remember. She's blanked it out, which probably isn't that uncommon in cases like hers, to just try to forget something that might have been horrible and awful in the past. And as she's trying to reconnect with her memories, she is brought back to life in many ways by a wonderful foster mother. And you know a lot about being a foster mother, don't you?
Yes, I do. And, you know, that's another way that the novel felt so personal to me is Naomi is found herself. She was a lost child herself and experienced such traumatic events that she just literally has blanked them out. But when she's 9, she's taken in by a really wonderful foster mother character named Mrs. Cottle. And Mrs. Cottle was also inspired by my own experiences because in addition to the work I do, I've actually adopted 3 kids from the foster care system. And I often say it's the best choice I've ever made. I've been a therapeutic foster adoptive parent now for 20 years, and being able to go on this journey of healing with my kids, it's just been amazing. And I've gotten so much out of it. I mean, it's interesting because for me, it's been profoundly healing for me as well. So I really delighted in being able to write these characters in The Child Finder where you would think it would be a very grim, depressing book, and I don't think it is. I think it's actually profoundly uplifting because it really showcases our human ability to help save each other, our, you know, all the wonderful good people that are out there that we don't hear enough about.
I agree with you, and I also would like to mention that Naomi is a wonderful character. We fall in love with her, but then there's the missing child, and the story is told through her eyes as well. And what a wonderful, resilient child she is.
Yeah, she's it's interesting. Her way of dealing with the trauma is she's invented this kind of magical fairy tale world that she lives inside. And so, as you say, you know, part of this story is told from the viewpoint of Naomi as she's looking for Madison. And then part of the story is told the viewpoint of Madison as she is coping and surviving with this terrible situation she's found herself in. And she uses the power of her own imagination, which I think is such an important and overlooked subject.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times right now we talk a lot about resiliency. And at one point in the novel, Naomi says, "I don't believe in resiliency, I believe in imagination." And I think that's just so true that we have such an incredible power to imagine ourselves, not just as a sanctuary, but, you know, that when we have an imagination, for instance, we can imagine having a different future. We can imagine ourselves in a better place. So I'm just fascinated with the power of imagination.
It's a coping mechanism, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I was child of a difficult history myself, and what saved my life was books and going to the library, and I you know, absorbed myself into stories and books, and I escaped through my imagination as well. And you know, I think that's the power of stories, you know, to not just give us sanctuary, but you know, it's through books and stories that we learn about each other, we become consoled. So, you know, in so many ways, stories have this kind of affirming power. It's like the way that we become connected as humans through story. And so mm-hmm. the novel kind of delves into that too, the power of story, the power of fairy tales, the power of our imagination to connect us as well. I'm really interested in how come some of us that come from horribly traumatic backgrounds, like myself, some of us end up surviving and even thriving. And other people succumb to rage and anger. And the one common theme that I see over and over again in my work and in my life is that those people that develop imagination, those people that read, those people that find stories tend to do much better because they can see a way out. They can imagine themselves into a different place. And I think that's just such a tremendously important thing. So, and it's so sad when it doesn't happen in time. So I'm very interested in what we can do to, you know, prevent and intervene and to use these kind of tools of survival to help people.
You have a real gift for being able to portray characters who are not particularly nice people as people that we can feel empathy for. And we have another character like that in The Child Finder.
Yes. And I thank you for noticing that and pointing that out. I feel such compassion for all my characters. And, you know, so much of my life, and you know, the work I do in the foster kids as well as the writing, I think I'm just really grappling with what makes some people commit terrible harm. And you know, I think so often in our society we think that if we try to understand these things that we're somehow endorsing them. And I think the opposite is true. I think we're not going to ever be able to prevent something if we don't understand it. And I think I'm trying really hard to understand it and to use my experiences and what I've learned I take that into my writing to kind of, to take the reader on this journey of understanding these people. And, you know, that does mean, you know, looking at what made them this way.
Uh-huh.
So that, you know, hopefully we can take that information and think about what can we do to prevent these things from happening as well.
Renee Denfeld joins us. Her new novel is The Child Finder. And people always want to categorize books. They always want to say it belongs in this genre, it belongs in that genre. Bookstores want to know where to put it in the bookstore. These books, these two novels of yours, defy categorization. Of course, this is a mystery, this new one. It's a thriller, definitely a thriller, but it's so much more. And as I was reading it, I like the way that in my mind you telegraph things to us. You say something or you show us something where as a reader I say, oh, I'll bet you that is so-and-so. I'll bet you this is going to happen. But it's something really satisfying to get those messages from you, because we feel like it's intentional and that you're going to give us so much satisfaction when we get there.
Thank you. You know, I find the idea of genres just kind of perplexing as a writer, because as a reader, I don't read something because it's been tagged as, you know, a mystery, or I just read because I love stories. I love books. So I think when I'm writing, I'm not thinking in those terms, and I'm kind of glad, because I think, you know, otherwise it would be a paint by numbers, and I kind of want to get away from all those kind of limited, you know, artificial constructs of what one particular kind of story is supposed to be like. So The Child Finder, you know, did it really turned into a, you know, it's part thriller, it's part fable, part fairy tale, part love story. It's just, you know, a whole bunch of things that kind of came together. And, you know, I do, you know, the story to me personally feels satisfying because it feels so real and authentic. So I'm really hopeful that the reader, like you just said, you know, will get to that place too. And I think that the way that the story unfolds and the conclusion is both actually really positive and redemptive, yet it's also really realistic. Mm-hmm. And that was really important to me. It's important to have a real conclusion, not a fantasy, but something that feels like this could really happen and these people could end up recovering from what might be considered really terrible events, that, you know, it really showcases our resiliency. So Madison just, you know, runs off into the forest and disappears. And I don't think it's a spoiler, because the reader soon realizes that she didn't actually die in the woods, and she's being held in a very terrible kind of situation. And she's, you know, and years are passing. So and those parts of the book that are told from her voice, I think they're very magical, because that's how she's coping with her reality. And I should add, there's nothing graphic in the novel. I don't write scenes of graphic violence. It's important to me that the victims, even though they're fictional victims, are treated with a great deal of respect and privacy for their experience. I wouldn't want to ever be exploitative, and that's a big concern of mine, that I treat those victims with a great deal of respect.
Well, you give us the freedom to imagine. You don't have to be graphic. We imagine. We get the hints, and that's mm-hmm. sufficient. And we also have two male characters in this story who really like Naomi. And Naomi has a difficult time trying to even think about having a boyfriend or a love relationship. And these two men are such nice guys. We really learn to like both of them.
Yes. I think that's such a key part of this story, is that, and it's something I've seen, you know, people have said, you know, boy, you know, in over a decade of doing all these cases involving people doing terrible things to each other, people have said to me, you know, you must be really grim and cynical and, you know, despairing about the world. Mm-hmm. And I always feel, no, I'm the opposite. the longer I do this work, actually, the more optimistic I become, because I see, for every terrible thing that I've witnessed personally and through my kids and my work, there's just countless examples of the goodness of humanity. And, you know, the foster parents, the volunteers, families trying to help mentally ill loved ones, people reaching out, like in the floods recently, you know, people went and gotten boats and went and rescued strangers they'd never met. So, you know, I think that my novels really capture that, and The Child Finder captures that. It has two men, both of whom are pretty much in love with Naomi, and they're both good guys.
Mm-hmm.
And they're well-intentioned, and, you know, there's good people out there. You know, I really like both these characters. There's Detective Winfield and a young man named Jerome, who's actually a war vet, and he's a really important part of the story, and I think another complex, really, you know, likable character.
I wasn't thinking of Winfield so much as the Ranger.
Oh, Ranger Dave as well.
Ranger Dave loves Naomi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's such a sweetheart. You know, and he's somebody, I won't give too much away, but he's somebody who lost his wife, and, you know, he's just a good-hearted person. And this is something I think that, you know, I mentioned briefly earlier, that we're always being inundated with so many negative things, and they're all true things, and we need to grapple with them. But at the same time, I think it's important to hold, you know, all the good stuff, too, and to refresh ourselves. With the goodness of humanity. And so he's, you know, definitely a character that captures that. He's just a total sweetheart.
I would also like to point out, Renee, that even though this book has a very serious subject, it's not all gloom and doom. There's some humor in here. And I think one of my favorite parts of the whole story, Naomi has been researching this area. It's a remote area. There are some old claims on it. There are these very eccentric people that live out in the middle of nowhere. Some of them make their livings by poaching and by trapping fur-bearing animals. And she's a little suspicious of this one family. And I love the story part where she goes to their house. That is just fabulous.
Thank you. Yeah, you know, they is this something and a lot of my work, I go and visit the most remote and often poverty-stricken parts of our state. And there's people in Oregon living out in the wilderness that are living lives that they lived probably 100 years ago. It's just remarkable. And so Naomi has some assumptions about these people that she thinks of as, you know, in probably less than flattering terms, these country people, and they just kind of turn her assumptions over on her own head. And I found that very delightful, too.
She's been doing this since she was 20 or so, looking for these missing children. But she has a policy that she just does one case at a time. And in this story, there's a spanner in the works because she ends up getting persuaded to take on a second case. And I'm wondering why you decided to do that.
You know, when I'm writing, I just kind of go with the story. I sometimes kind of have a vague idea where it's going, but to me it's like I fall down this delicious rabbit hole, mm-hmm. and the story just kind of comes out. So there's an extra plot line that did, it just kind of popped up. And I thought, oh no, you know, what's going on with this?
Uh-huh.
And I think for me, you know, it was important. There's another, the plot line involves an African American family in town, and it touches upon issues of discrimination towards black children who have disabilities and, you know, some other kind of serious topics. Mm-hmm. And that's stuff that I've dealt with in my life. My family is largely African American. It's my home culture. It's the neighborhood and the culture I was raised in. And I think it was, you know, it was just part of, it was important to me that the story, you know, at least, you know, touch upon some of the discrimination that's out there. And unfortunately, sadly, that happens in missing child cases, that a poor black mother is going to possibly be presumed guilty, whereas a missing white child gets a lot of media attention and much more concern on the part of some people in the community. So I think with this, you know, I wanted to be able to kind of touch upon some of those issues in the second storyline.
This book made me think about something I hadn't thought about in a long time. When I was living in Des Moines, this would have been in the early 80s, they had the first notable abduction of a newspaper carrier. And shortly thereafter, they had another one. The first one was a young boy named Johnny Gosch. They never found him. And they never found the second boy. And it reminded me of that. And I remember years later, I was working in an office building. And by a weird coincidence, Johnny Gosch's mother worked in the building. And I remember one time, I didn't know her, but I knew who she was. I'd seen her picture in the paper. And I was in the elevator with her, just the two of us going up. And she just gave me this look. I'll never forget it. This look, and we didn't speak, but I felt her pain in just those few seconds that I made eye contact with her. I felt the pain of the missing child.
Oh, I just, it's, It's so difficult and unimaginable, I think. And was the look, do you think the look, was the look communicating her pain, or was it a distrust of never knowing who took her child?
I don't know what it was. Yeah. I in my imagination, I thought, she's always thinking, what does my son look like now if he's alive?
Oh.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just so heartbreaking. And we have these very high-profile cases where people are abducted and held captive. And it's such an unspeakable, unthinkable crime, and yet it happens.
Yeah.
You know, and as a mother, I know that for me, I think, you know, it's hard to imagine anything worse than that happening. And yet it, you know, the novel isn't statistical. It's not political. You know, but, you know, Naomi briefly mentions the number of children that go missing in the United States. And I know from my own work, I think that those numbers are really an underestimate.
Mm.
A lot of times, for instance, kids are, you know, older children are termed runaways when they might have been captive, and, you know, being a lot of teenagers, sadly, are get caught up in sex trafficking. It's such an important topic, and I think there's just so much we could be doing. We could better fund the investigations. We could pay more attention to these things. We could look at, you know, the flaws and the holes in our system. My heart just goes out to that woman. How terribly, terribly hard.
Mm-hmm. And as you note in your story, in your fiction, The Child Finder, having a child disappear like that makes it very difficult for the marriage to hold together. And in the case of this woman, she and her husband eventually got divorced. They just couldn't handle it anymore.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, they've, unfortunately, the chances of a marriage surviving the loss of a child like that are pretty low. And so in The Child Finder, that's one thing that Naomi's dealing with this couple, the Culvers. Having lost their daughter, their marriage is definitely on the rocks. And, you know, Naomi's, you know, gets, you know, is very concerned about that and, you know, trying to hope that they can find a way to move forward together. And it's something, I think, one of the themes of the novel is our power to save each other. And it's something I've seen, you know, for instance, in my kids and my work, is I think that we all have the potential to help each other and to just even reach out in small but meaningful ways. And the power of that to change lives for the better is immense, and it's there. And sometimes we don't, you know, I think we don't even recognize it. So it's very much a novel of people trying to find each other, people trying to find themselves, people that are feeling lost and trapped. Either they're actually lost and trapped, or they're emotionally feeling lost, and the power that others have and we have, you know, to save each other.
Renee, thank you so much for your time today and for this wonderful book.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on, Vic. You know, again, I'm just so delighted. I often remember our conversation a couple of years ago. It's really too bad you don't have just a standing guest, because I would just appear on your show regularly.
Well, if we ever...
you're so wonderful and thoughtful, and I so appreciate you having me on.
It was our pleasure. My guest has been The Child Finder's author, Renee Denfeld. It's her second novel, and track down the first one, The Enchanted. For The Book Nook, I'm Vic McKeonis.